All right, ready to dive in. Today, we're heading back to ancient Israel. But don't worry, this isn't just a history lesson.
Right, right.
We're going to uncover some seriously relevant wisdom from the book of Proverbs.
Okay.
Chapters 28 and 29, to be exact.
Gotcha.
It's all about righteousness and wickedness and how they shape society.
Interesting.
Especially for those in charge, those leaders, those in positions of power. You know, those making the big decisions.
I see.
It's fascinating, actually, how these ancient sayings, often seen as simple moral lessons, can offer some pretty deep insights.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
They offer these insights into social dynamics, the kind we still struggle with today.
Definitely, definitely. Timeless stuff.
Our source material today is an academic lecture that really digs deep into these proverbs.
Deep dive, huh?
Exactly, a deep dive. It focuses on the guidance the proverbs offer to leaders.
I like it.
But before we get into the nitty-gritty, I think it's important to understand, well, a key feature of Hebrew poetry, it's called parallelism.
Oh, yeah. Parallelism. Crucial stuff. Can't really understand the true meaning without it, can you?
Absolutely not. It's not always about opposites or synonyms, you know, black and white, good and bad. Sometimes the second line of the verse expands on the first.
Hmm. Interesting. Add some nuance, you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It nuances the first line in a way that could be missed if you're not paying attention.
I see. I see. Gotta read between the lines sometimes.
And the lecturer we're focusing on today, Dr. Haim, he argues that assuming this straightforward one-to-one parallelism, well, it can lead to some pretty shallow surface-level interpretations.
Really?
Yeah, he uses Proverbs 28.28 as, well, as a prime example.
Lay it on me.
When the wicked arise, people hide. But when they perish, the righteous increase.
Hmm. Sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? Bad guys go away, good guys take over. Classic.
Right. At first glance, it seems like a simple equation. But Dr. Haim challenges that. He's got a different take.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What's he suggesting instead? What's his angle?
Well, he points out that the emphasis isn't on the righteous, you know, just becoming powerful when the wicked fall.
Yeah.
But on them increasing in number as a result. That increase, he argues, that's the real key to a flourishing society.
Ah, so it's not just a simple power shift. It's about the numbers. More good guys, better society.
That's what he's getting at. It's not about good versus evil in a vacuum. It's about, like you said, the ratio shifting. More righteous people equals a better society overall. But then it begs the question, what defines a righteous person in this context?
Right, right. What makes a good guy, so to speak?
Is it just, you know, being nice, being polite? Is it that simple?
Well, not exactly. The lecture really dives into the specific definitions of, well, wicked and righteous.
Okay.
And in these proverbs, you know, it's a lot more nuanced than just simple morality.
I see.
It's deeper than that. The wicked, they exploit others. Hmm. They disrupt that social harmony, you know, just for their own personal gain.
Selfish, then.
Exactly. And the righteous, well, they're the ones who are actively working for the good of the entire community. They're the ones upholding justice and fairness.
So we're not talking about some vague feel-good righteousness, but people actively engaged, people making society better.
Precisely. And that idea of actively working for the good of society, well, that's where the concept of leadership comes into play, doesn't it?
Right, because Proverbs 29.2, it jumps right into that connection.
Oh, yeah, how's that?
When the righteous increase, the people will be happy, but when a wicked man rules, a people will groan.
Whoa. That's pretty powerful, isn't it? It's not just a fact. It's like a warning to leaders, to those in charge, about what happens when things go wrong.
It's almost like saying, hey, if you want to be in charge, you better take this seriously.
For real, serious business. And think about that word groaning.
Yeah. What about it?
It seems to imply something deeper than, you know, just grumbling and complaining.
Right. It's like, it's more than just, ugh. This government.
Exactly. It's more like widespread social unrest.
Oh, wow. Or even divine judgment.
Whoa, like biblical level stuff.
You got it. National catastrophe, even.
Okay, so the stakes are pretty high here. We're not messing around.
Nope. Not just hurt feelings. We're talking about the potential downfall of a whole nation here.
And you know what's interesting? It specifically mentions a wicked man ruling.
Oh, you're right. You're right. It's not wicked people. It's a wicked man. Why single him out?
Yeah. So is it saying that one bad leader is more detrimental than a whole bunch of bad citizens running around? Like, why focus on just one bad ruler?
It's highlighting, you know, the impact that one person in power can have.
I see. One person can make that much of a difference.
Absolutely. For better or worse, you know. A leader's decisions, they affect everyone, everyone under their authority. One person at the top, they can create an environment where righteousness, you know, flourishes, where it spreads like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can create an environment where wickedness takes root.
And it spreads like wildfire. Yeah, like a disease.
Exactly. And spreads and spreads. So yeah, one person can make a huge difference.
Wow, I get it now. Okay, so we've got this idea of righteousness being good for society, but leadership, the people at the top, they play a big role.
Absolutely. Can't ignore that leadership aspect. No way.
Now, earlier, you mentioned Dr. Haim going deep on the language, the specific words used in these proverbs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Love getting into the nitty-gritty, the details. That's where the real insights hide.
Me too. I'm all about those hidden layers. I'm ready to get into the linguistic weeds here. Let's talk about that Hebrew verb, rabba.
Okay, rabba, often translated as to increase.
Right, to increase. So what's Dr. Haim's take on rabba? What's he seeing there?
Well, he challenges the assumption that it always means to become powerful in these contexts, you know?
So he's saying it's not just about the righteous grabbing power.
Exactly. It's not a power grab.
There's more to it.
Much more. He's arguing, you know, that rabba, in these specific proverbs, it's more about the number of righteous people increasing, not necessarily, you know, their power or authority.
Okay. So he's really emphasizing the numbers again.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about a few righteous people becoming super powerful. It's about more and more people becoming righteous.
Precisely. Remember that idea, that ratio shifting, you know, more good guys, better society.
Yeah, yeah. The ratio.
He's saying it's about that spread of righteousness, like a wave. A growing community committed to justice and well-being, you know, for everyone. Not a power grab.
Gotcha. Not a hostile takeover by the righteous. It's more organic.
Exactly. It's like the good grows and spreads naturally.
Okay, I'm with you. But does he just pull this interpretation of rabba out of thin air?
Oh, no. He backs it up. He meticulously analyzes several seemingly similar proverbs.
Oh, okay. Which one?
Proverbs 11.Zen, 28.1, 28.28, 29.2, and 29.16. They all touch on these themes, you know, righteousness and wickedness.
Okay, so he's comparing and contrasting, looking for the subtle clues. I like it.
Yeah, exactly. And he argues, you know, that looking at them side by side, it reveals these, well, subtle but crucial differences in how they're worded.
So he's digging into those subtle differences to find a deeper meaning. Tell me more about these differences. What kind of things is he noticing?
Well, for example, you know, some proverbs describe the response to wickedness as taking cover or hiding.
Interesting.
Others use the word groaning, like we discussed earlier.
Right, right.
And he's arguing, you know, these aren't just stylistic choices. They actually suggest different types of threats, like different flavors of wickedness, you know.
So hiding implies a more immediate physical danger.
Exactly. Like, hide now, ask questions later.
Yeah, yeah. And groaning, that's more like a response to long-term oppression.
Precisely. Like a deep societal sigh.
It's like the difference between, I don't know, dodging a punch and carrying a heavy weight on your shoulders.
Perfect analogy. You get it.
Okay, I see. So paying attention to these little details, that's how we unlock the deeper meaning.
Absolutely. It's all about the details.
It's like a treasure hunt. You got to look closely to find the real gold.
Exactly. And that's what makes these proverbs so powerful, so insightful. They're not just these abstract moral lessons, you know, hanging out there in the ether.
Right.
They offer practical wisdom.
Yeah.
About how societies function, you know, how individuals can make a difference, and how that leadership can shape the destiny of a nation.
Powerful stuff. All right, so we've talked about the righteous increasing in number, the dangers of wickedness, and how leadership, especially that one wicked leader, can have a huge impact.
All right, can't forget about the leader, the guy at the top.
Definitely not. But you mentioned Dr. Haim going deep on Proverbs 29.2.
Oh, yeah. The one about, you know, the righteous increasing and the people rejoicing. Good times.
Right. Did you find anything else interesting there? Anything I might have missed on, you know, the first read through?
Well, he focuses on a detail, and I bet you missed it.
Oh, I'm sure I did. I'm always missing details. Lay it on me. What is it?
The word people. Yeah, it's singular in the second part of the proverb.
Okay. So, but when a wicked man rules, a people will groan. You're right. I never noticed that before.
Hey, details.
Why single out a wicked man ruling? It seems so deliberate, so specific.
Right. And this is where Dr. Haim, you know, his insights get really thought-provoking. He suggests that it's not just about the actions of the wicked ruler, but about the unity.
the unity of the people suffering.
So it's not just a bunch of individuals groaning separately. It's a people, a collective, all groaning together.
Exactly, like a chorus of groaning.
Because of that one wicked leader.
It highlights how wickedness at the top can create this shared suffering, you know, mm-hmm. a burden that the entire community has to bear.
Man, that's a heavy thought. It makes you think about how much a single leader can impact not just the actions, but the spirit, the very heart of a nation.
It's a lot to think about, that's for sure. And that whole idea of the people as like a unified entity suffering together, it hits even harder when you remember that ancient Israel, well, they were a nation. Their well-being, it was tied to their success as a nation.
Yeah.
You know, their ability to thrive together as one.
Yeah, their fate was intertwined. So this proverb, it's not just about individual morality then. It's bigger than that.
Right. It's about the health of the nation, the whole society. It's about their resilience.
Okay. Yeah, I see that. Their ability to bounce back from hardship, to face challenges together. So this proverb, it's almost like a cautionary tale for leaders, right?
Yeah. Almost like, hey, leaders, pay attention. Your actions have consequences. They ripple outwards. They touch everyone.
Mess this up and your whole nation might start groaning. No pressure, huh?
Yeah, no pressure at all. But it's not all doom and gloom, right? There's a flip side to this.
What do you mean?
Well, if one bad leader can mess things up so badly, wouldn't a good leader have the opposite effect?
Oh, right. Yeah. A righteous leader, someone who embodies those good principles, they could lift the whole nation up.
Exactly. And remember what we talked about earlier, that emphasis on the number of righteous people increasing.
Yeah. Yeah. The ratio shifting. The more the merrier when it comes to righteousness, right?
Right. And that's actually really empowering. It means that even if we're not, you know, kings or presidents, our choices still matter. Even small actions can contribute to a more righteous society. Like, we're not just waiting for a superhero to come save the day. We can all be part of the solution.
So it's a team effort then. Not just about who's sitting on the throne, but about everyone playing their part.
That's the idea. And it changes how we think about righteousness too.
How so?
It's not just about being, you know, passively good or following the rules. It's about actively engaging, you know, doing things that promote justice, fairness, compassion. Working for the well-being of others, even in small ways, every single day.
Okay, so it's about taking action. Putting those righteous principles into practice. I like that. It feels a lot more practical, more achievable.
Right. It's not some lofty ideal. It's something we can actually do, something we can work towards every day.
Earlier, we were talking about how Dr. Heim analyzes all these different proverbs. Didn't he also spend some time with Proverbs 29.16?
He did. He did. That one's interesting. It says, when the wicked increase, transgression increases, but the righteous will look upon their collapse. Offers a slightly different perspective, you know?
Yeah, really? How so? What's different about this one?
Well, in the other Proverbs, you know, we saw the righteous actively rejoicing or, you know, actively increasing in number when the wicked bite the dust.
Right. They were really taking charge and making their presence known.
Yeah. Yeah. But here in this proverb, they just look upon the collapse. Seems a bit more, I don't know, passive, more laid back.
Like, okay, we've done our part. Now we just sit back and watch the dominoes fall. Is that what it's saying?
Could be. Or maybe, you know, it's suggesting a sense of confidence. Like knowing that in the end, wickedness always loses.
That's an interesting thought. Like, the righteous have this unshakable faith that in the end, justice will prevail.
Right. Like, we're on the right side of history, so we can just relax and watch the show.
It's like that saying, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice.
Exactly. There's this sense of, I don't know, inevitability, like trusting that eventually righteousness wins out. And notice how it connects the dots, you know? The increase of the wicked directly leads to more transgression.
So more bad guys equals more bad stuff happening. Seems pretty logical. What's the deeper meaning there?
Well, on the surface, yeah, it's straightforward. But Dr. Heim, he goes a little deeper. He suggests it's not just about how much transgression increases, but the kind of transgression that flourishes, you know, as wickedness spreads.
Great. Now I'm really curious. What does that even mean? Like, different flavors of wickedness.
Think about it like this. When just a few individuals, you know, go rogue, act wickedly, the damage they do, it's kind of contained, isolated incidents.
Okay, not following.
But when wickedness spreads, when it becomes widespread, when it infects the whole culture, well, the transgressions, they become bolder, more in your face, more systemic, you know?
It's like a few bad apples versus a whole orchard that's gone bad.
Perfect analogy.
A few bad apples, you can toss them out, no big deal. But a widespread disease, that's a whole different ballgame.
Right. Needs a much bigger solution. And that kind of widespread wickedness, it eats away at society, you know? It destroys trust. It undermines justice. It leads to that groaning we were talking about earlier.
It's amazing how these ancient proverbs, they can speak to such complex issues. It's like they have this timeless wisdom, you know?
Yeah.
Something that transcends time and culture.
It really is remarkable. Dr. Heim's analysis, it shows us just how much depth there is to these seemingly simple sayings. Paying attention to those details, you know, the specific words, the way they're put together. That's how we unlock those hidden layers of meaning.
He's giving us a decoder ring.
Exactly. And that's what makes this deep dive so valuable, so enriching. We're not just skimming the surface here. We're getting down into the guts of these texts.
Grappling with those big questions, the implications for us, for our communities, for the whole world, really.
Exactly. It makes you wonder, what would happen if we really took these proverbs to heart, you know, if we really internalized them, lived by them? What kind of impact could we have?
Okay, so we've gone through all these proverbs. We've talked about the righteous increasing, the dangers of wickedness, the impact of leadership.
Mm.
What's the takeaway for us? What can we actually do with this information?
Well, one of the biggest takeaways, I think, is that these proverbs, they're not just giving us some abstract moral lecture, right? They're giving us practical guidance, you know, for how to live in this world, how to contribute to our communities, how to navigate power and leadership, all that.
So it's not about just sitting back and hoping for the best or waiting for some righteous leader to show up and fix everything.
Definitely not. Remember, it's all about the number of righteous people increasing.
Right. The ratio. More good guys, better society.
Exactly. It's a call to action. It's saying each one of us, we have a part to play. We can all promote righteousness, cultivate justice, work for the common good. It's empowering, really.
Yeah, it is. It means our choices matter, even the small ones. We can all be part of something bigger. But let's be real. Being righteous these days, it can seem kind of daunting. Where do we even begin?
It doesn't have to be about, you know, grand gestures or being a saint. Remember, Dr. Heim emphasized that even small increases in the number of righteous people, they can make a difference. It's about those everyday acts of courage, you know, of compassion, standing up for what's right, even when it's hard, being a good neighbor, a responsible citizen, using your voice, speaking out against injustice, even in small ways. Those things add up.
So it's not about waiting for some huge revolution. It's about those small, steady actions.
Exactly. Making our little corner of the world a bit more, just a bit more compassionate, a bit more righteous, just doing what we can where we are.
It's like we're all planting seeds, you know,
yeah.
And those seeds, they can grow into something amazing.
That's a great way to put it. It's about choosing to be one of the righteous, the ones who shine like the dawn, as Proverbs 28.12 says.
Beautiful imagery.
And it's a message that, well, it resonates across time and culture. These ancient proverbs, they remind us that that fight for justice, for righteousness, it's ongoing. And we're all part of it, no matter who we are or what our position is.
It's a pretty powerful realization, actually.
Yeah.
We started with some ancient Hebrew poetry and ended up with, well, with a vision for a better world. Thanks for guiding us through all this. It's really been fascinating.
It's been my pleasure. And, you know, it makes you wonder, what would happen if we all committed to bringing a little more righteousness into our own lives, you know, into our families, our workplaces, our communities? What kind of world could we create?
That's a great question. One worth thinking about. And one I hope our listeners will continue to wrestle with. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, folks, keep searching for that wisdom.
It really is something to think about. You know, what if we all of us, really took these proverbs to heart, made that choice, you know, to be more righteous, even in our own little corner of the world? What kind of impact could we have?
What kind of change could we create?
Exactly. And that, I think that's one of the most powerful things we can take away from all this. From this deep dive.
Yeah.
These ancient proverbs, they're not just some, you know, some theoretical stuff, you know, just ideas floating around.
Right, right.
They're offering a blueprint for something better, for a better society, one built on justice, fairness, commitment to, you know, the well-being of all.
A guidebook for a more righteous life, you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. And it all starts with us, with each of us. It's like a reminder, you know, we're not just sitting on the sidelines. We're in the game. We're shaping the world around us.
They're all players, in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's both challenging and hopeful.
How so?
Well, challenging because it means, you know, looking in the mirror, examining our actions, our motivations, asking ourselves, am I really living this out?
Am I really living up to these ideals?
It's a call to self-reflection, for sure.
It is. It is. But it's also hopeful, because it tells us that change is possible. That even our small actions, those little acts of good, they can make a difference. They ripple outwards, you know, far beyond ourselves.
It's not about being perfect, then.
No, no, not at all. It's about striving. Striving to embody those ideals, you know, in our everyday lives.
So every act of justice, every act of compassion, every time we speak up or lend a hand, we're adding to that increase of righteousness.
Exactly. It's an ongoing thing, you know, this commitment to building a better world one step at a time, one act at a time. And I think that's a pretty inspiring message, don't you? Coming from these ancient texts.
It is inspiring. It's like they're speaking across the centuries, reminding us that this fight for justice, for righteousness, it's never really over. It's always ongoing.
We all have a part to play.
We all have a role. Well, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive. We started with ancient Hebrew poetry and ended up with, well, with a vision for a better world.
That's the power of these proverbs, isn't it? They offer timeless wisdom, guidance for living a better life, for building a better society.
They really do. Thanks for being our guide on this journey. It's been fascinating.
My pleasure. And for everyone listening, keep seeking that wisdom. Keep striving for righteousness. And who knows, maybe we can create that better world together.
That's a great note to end on. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Until next time, keep those deep dives going.